From the racetracks around Australia, here's Inside Motorsport.
And once again, welcome to Inside Motorsport. And Colin Ford this side of the panel, Craig Revell sitting on the other side of the panel, and once again another interesting week, a lot of news happening around the world and around Australia in motorsport. And first up with us this evening on the line is the man himself, the editor of Motorsport News, Phil Brannigan. Phil, a busy old time for you the last week or so.
It has been a busy old week. We've had the kick-off of the Shell Championship Series, of course, at Phillip Island, and another issue to do. We had two issues in 10 days.
Yes, and on top of that, the Motorsport Awards, which, of course, Motorsport News was the one that got that one kicked off 6 years ago now?
Yeah, 6 years ago. I'd almost forgotten about that. It's been a long haul, and yeah, that was a great night. Good to see everyone in the sport getting together, and whether they're road racers or drag racers or speedway people or carters or ralliers. It's great.
I just want to say, with that, the Motorsport Awards, not only like do they honour Australia's drivers, but the recognition that the awards are now getting worldwide. I jumped on NHRA online today. Andrew Cowan winning the drag racing award already on the NHRA site. Notification that he had done such a thing. So not only is the recognition to Andrew Cowan quite great and deservedly so, but the Americans are taking notice that this young fella has been rightly awarded as Drag Racer of the Year.
Yeah, they sure are. And I was talking to Andrew when the night finished, and he was like, you know, I've met Peter Brock, and I've met Possum Bourne, and I've met, you know, all these heroes of mine. He wasn't aware that Jack Braden had won three World Drivers' Championships, for instance. And it really is something when you see all these people get together, and someone like Peter Brock, for instance, will say, you know, I haven't met Jim Reid before, it's great.
And on top of that, having Frank Gardner and Jack Graham on the stage is a recipe for a lot of frivolity.
Yeah, they had some jokes there that were almost as old as Frank and Jack combined, but it was a great night. And at one stage, I actually had to get up and make a speech as well, and I was standing there, about to make a speech, thinking, there's Frank Gardner on one side and Jack on the other, and Barry Sheen in front of me, and it's great to have all those people in one room.
And, of course, on top of that, one good thing about having to put two magazines back to back like you did, neither one of them was short on any information, and still plenty of news. I want to speak to you about one story which you've been researching in depth. It wasn't the lead story, but it was very interesting to see that the Ford Tickford Racing is still really Glenn Seaton Racing.
Well, it's a very tricky delineation that Ford are making, and David Flint from Tickford has been in contact with us since the story came out, so I don't want to sound like I'm being careful about what I'm going to say, but you and I and everybody in the media in motor racing, I'm sure, was under the impression that, you know, the announcement last year and Jeff Kennett going to the launch in Melbourne and so on, that it was going to be a full factory team, first time I think since 1977, and that was the way it was going to be. Hasn't worked out like that. Ford and Tickford are sponsors of Glen Seaton Racing, or a Ford Tickford Racing it is, as it is now, but Glen still owns the race team. So, and David Flint's pointed out a few things. David Flint, by the way, is the managing director of Tickford. And he's pointed out a few things for us, which we're going to follow up on. But essentially the story is 100% correct. Ford don't own the team. Glen Seaton owns the team. Ford, Credit, Tickford, call it what you will, everyone associated with Ford are sponsors. But it's not really a factory team. So still, the only factory team in Australian motor racing is HRT.
Yeah, it's a case of the signage is on the car and it's all in the name, but the ownership still rests with Glen Seaton. So I think probably too, the old story that overseas reigns when they come to make decisions.
Well, David Flynn has asked us to point out that the decision was made in Australia, and that contradicts some information we've already had from some insiders at Ford, but nevertheless, we'll take that on board and air that in the next issue of the magazine. And in the wash-up, I guess it really doesn't matter, does it? The cars are going to look the same. They're going to be driven the same. We saw last week that Cromley and Seaton are in terrific form behind the wheel. They're still going to be threats for the Shell Championship Series in 2000. But, no, they're not a works team.
One important thing with Ford, whilst we're talking Ford, you have got a fantastic report with Howard Marsden, almost a scorecard on his first 12 months in the job. We had the opportunity to catch up with him back at 2 litre Bathurst time when you were getting rained on. And we spent probably about 15, 20 minutes on air with him talking about what was going on with Ford. And the quote he used in your magazine was very similar to a quote that he used on our show, whereas I had asked him about the problems the body kits for the AU Falcons had, team starting the season almost without and getting to the track and receiving an aero kit. And he had said then, if that was to happen again, I would not be doing this job. And it's good to see that he, and he's always had this attitude, but good to see when you have asked him, you know, what happens if I was to ask you, are you going to be winning? If he said, if the answer was no, not likely, he would also not be in the same job.
Yeah, well, we now know that we're going to be speaking with Howard for at least next year, because Craig Baird's already won a race and Ford have already done that. But another thing which didn't make it into the story, which is possibly worth pursuing in the future, is that when the cars come to be homologated again, and when the VX Commodore comes out, that will happen, is that Ford will substantially change the front aerodynamic on the kit on the AU Falcon, simply because, as all of us know, you see an AU Falcon run off the road through a sand trap, it's over. Everything folds up. VT Commodores don't do that. They need to completely redesign the mounts, and that's one thing Howard and his people will be working on. But Howard's an extraordinary person. He's very, well, you know, from talking to him, he's very correct. Some people refer to him as the vicar, but, you know, behind that polite exterior is a guy who is really out to kill Holden. He really wants to go out there and kick him in the butt.
Yeah, very, very serious man. And I guess if you're a Ford lover, then that's the sort of person that you want driving the Blue Oval Badge's future.
Absolutely. And he operates at a very high level within the Ford hierarchy in Australia. He's very well known and very well respected in the Ford hierarchy overseas. Don't forget, he was with Nissan for more than a decade and ran their motorsports program for them. So Howard Marsden has more contacts, I guess, in the international motorsport arena than somebody like his predecessor, Greg Harbutt, ever dreamt of having. He probably has more influence. He has increased their funding, because that is what Ford are doing around the world. They've increased their Formula One funding through Jaguar. They're going, for instance, into SCCA Trans Am and Paul Gianolotti in the Jaguar. So every time someone in Australia reports back to the USA and says, we're spending more money on motor racing, that's what America wants. That's what they want them to do.
And, of course, the other news that you're sort of breaking this week is on Sandown and the potential return of a major V8 supercar endurance event to Sandown next year if John Davison can get his act together.
Well, John Davison is very much trying to get his act together with IMG, with Martin Jolly and so on, trying to, I guess, relaunch the format of the race. While new events have come and in some cases perhaps even gone since Sandown lost the 500, I mean, who knows what's going to happen in Queensland. But Darwin's come along, Canberra's come along, Adelaide's come along, and now Davison is starting to alter his mix, trying to look for a special event. And my feeling is that that's going to be a very successful event, because the people who are making the decisions at Ford and Holden are saying, we like Sandown, we can take our valued clients there, show them a good time, show them our cars, show them our race teams. And Sandown's a great venue to take important people to and to entertain them. I'm not saying that Adelaide and Canberra won't have all those features, I'm sure they will. But in the biggest market, in the biggest motoring market in the country, in the suburbs, you can't go past Sandown.
And of course, the winner hot lap with the legend competition, it closed 5 p.m. today, last mail as they say, so some...
Today?
Today, yes.
I'll say, so now Phil can announce that I'm going for a ride with Moth.
Yes, but the cheque has cleared into my Swiss bank account, and I'm very pleased to say you've won it. No, I'm joking. As long as your entries are in, and they're postmarked prior to Friday, or Friday or before, you get a shot at the draw, but that draw will actually be made in Sydney next week, and some lucky motorsport news reader is going to be strapping himself in alongside, well, actually one each, one alongside Moff, one alongside Brock, and we're going to hose you down and let you go for it around Albert Park. That'll be great.
Yeah, always good fun around somewhere like Albert Park. It'll be definitely a experience of a lifetime. Now, of course, you've had the 2 weeks in a row. You've got a fortnight till the next issue. No doubt the next issue will be getting very much into the Australian Grand Prix preview.
Absolutely. Played golf with Mark Webber on Thursday. Endless pursuit of research as far as Formula One is concerned.
And how many rounds did you do in the 19th hole?
We had a few, actually. We played at Albert Park. But Yeah, we're in full Formula One mode now. Our little man in France, Joe Sayward, is busily belting out a Formula One preview for the next issue. There's so much going on now. Kart testing, of course. The big question everyone is wants to know is what's going to happen to Dario, apart from the fact he's going to get some TLC in Tennessee from the lovely Ashley Judd, who's nursing him at the moment. But is he going to make the first race? Who will sit in? Will it be Zanardi? We're all standing by our telephones.
Mm. And of course, the other great roaring question is, do you have an invitation to Jacques and Danny's little do yet?
Modesty forbids. I have connections with the Villeneuve family. I have connections with the Minogue family. I've previously delivered papers to all those individuals in my paper rounds, but don't know. Is it going to happen? And if it does anyone care?
Mm.
Really?
Yeah. But anyhow, we look forward to the next edition of Motorsport News. Thanks very much for your time with us this evening, Phil Brannigan.
Pleasure.
Thank you.
And Phil Brannigan joining us there on the line. I think we should go to Sweden now for the wrap-up of the Swedish rally.
And yes, the wrap-up.
I gave it to you.
No, the man didn't give it to me. He gave me everything else but the wrap-up to the Swedish rally.
Oh, okay.
The only thing I've got here is a thing saying that the Nicky Grist
is complaining.
But yeah, it's Peugeot and Finland's Marcus Gronholm who drove the Peugeot 206 World Rally Car to its and his own first FIA World Rally Championship win in Sweden last weekend. Gronholm dominated the second round of the series, assuming the front running on the second special stage and holding it to the finish. World champion Tommy Mäkinen was second in his Mitsubishi to maintain his points lead in the series, and Colin McRae drove his Ford Focus into third place. It was a nervous final day for Gronholm, who hit a rock on the first special stage, slightly damaging a wheel. He then had to judge his pace to hold out a charging Mäkinen without risking it off. So good to see there Marcus Gronholm and the Peugeot team making their first win of the World Rally Championship. As mentioned, Tommy Mäkinen and second, Colin McRae third, Thomas Redstrom in the privateer, as it is now, Corolla fourth, and Richard Burns in Subaru Impreza fifth, and the wily old man himself, Juha Kankkonen, in the other Impreza in sixth. François Delacour, seventh in the other Peugeot 206, Freddie Loy, Mitsubishi Charisma, Martin in the another Corolla, and Oriol in his first outing for Sayat in tenth place, and Carlos Sainz, DNF.
All right, then. Now, war in Speedway has had a brand new meaning. Grant Nicholas joins us on the line. And Grant, the Bacchus Marsh facility, known as Western Auto Raceway, has proved to be a very popular venue with the drivers, a very fast venue, which has made it extremely popular with the spectators. And in 2 weeks' time now, it will be the host of the Australian Speed Car Championships, an honour going to a first-year Speedway, which is not very often afforded to it.
Good evening, Craig. No, it's not. It's rather unique in Australian motorsport to do such a thing, but it's, as you said, it's the newest speedway in Australia, and I should probably tell you, the listeners, a couple of other things. It's got a 510-metre pole line, but the track is 32 metres wide. It's got the slight banking in it, which is required for fast racing, but by having that 32 metres wide, you can run cars 5 and 6 wide at full speed. The sprint cars are running in the vicinity of 240 kilometres an hour, and we're getting well over 200 kilometres an hour out of the midget speed cars. We've had Warren Ekins, Adam Baines, Stephen Graham, and quite a few other drivers from different parts of the nation doing some testing and running at some of our meetings in the last couple of weeks. And it's been rather exciting what's happening as far as the racing format for the Australian titles coming up, and also the week before the Victorian titles.
Yeah, it is a pretty impressive card. You've got the Victorian titles, which is traditionally the precursor to the Speed Car Championships, which gives all the drivers a chance to at least have a run on the track before the title. And then on the weekend of the Speed Car title, you have the Victorian Sprint Car title and the Victorian Hot Rod title. Now, the Hot Rods are something I'd like to have a quick chat to you about, because they're a fantastic division which hasn't got a lot of publicity before, but they are racing around in Oscar direction, and they look like compact speed cars with bodies.
Yes, a lot of them are virtually the sprint car frames or chassis, as we call them, from a couple of seasons ago, and they've got the old bodies, the old style. And what the, a lot of people talk about it. It's an old-fashioned style of racing. People remember Tracy's down here. They remember the Liverpool, the Westmead, and other races, and the showgrounds there in Sydney, and the Echo in Queensland, and everything like this. And it's amazing the nostalgia is coming back, and the following that these cars are getting. The fields are getting stronger, a lot of support from them, and we see a lot of people in the 50 or 60-year-old bracket putting their offsprings into that type of car and having a race there. So it's a category which is doing extremely well and very popular with the fans on the mound. And I should point out we've got seating there for 10,000 fans, so we can cater for them extremely well.
Now, they're a sprint car chassis, in fact, because they look a lot smaller than what they must be then.
Yes, they are a sprint car chassis. All right, you might be thinking of them, the Mini Modifieds, which are a bit smaller.
Okay. That is probably what I'm thinking of, Super Rods or something like that.
That's great.
But even so, three very big titles being fought on the one weekend, and with, at the moment, the pick of the speed car drivers being over in Western Australia, they're almost like a World Series tour for the speed cars with the Western Australian League, and then they started off in at Speedway City, or they started off Parramatta, Speedway City, now across in WA, and they'll be heading back to Bacchus Marsh there and Western Auto Raceway with a lot of good form under their belt, with of course Mike Figler Media, former Australian champion, already winning the Laurie Matthews Memorial Race meeting last Friday night.
Yes, that's correct, and also we've got strong entry for Northern Territory, Queensland. I think there's something like 15, 20 cards coming out of New South Wales as far as that at the nominations. We've got two nominations at the present time for New Zealand. We believe that there's another one coming through either tomorrow or on Tuesday, and plus the local cars, so it's a very strong field. We've got 59 nominations at the present time, and it looks like it could go up to 62 or 63.
Now, just in closing, Western Auto Raceway first season. I think I read on the internet site, which is www.westernautoraceway.com.au, that in fact you have something like 30 race meetings this season.
Yes, we've got 22 night meetings, plus in addition to that we have another 10 what we call club meetings, and they're conducted on the Sundays and a couple during the actual what we call the winter break, and that allows the club racers from all the various and regional and country areas to come down and race on the track here. That's something we found has been supported extremely well. Weekend before last, despite having 36 degrees temperatures, we had just over 85 country cars running at this type of meeting. It allows all members of the family. Sometimes there's the mums and the daughters running the women's races, and then we have the adult races and also the junior races. So we have various formats there, and we find we're getting a lot of support there, and it allows them to compete on what we call the A-class tracks.
Yes, that's right, and an important thing too is bringing up some younger drivers into the sport, and that's a great way of doing it on as you said, a track which certainly all the A-class drivers like to run on Saturday night.
Most certainly, like the weekend before last, as I mentioned, we had three family members from one particular family running one car. That car missed out two races on the whole day. It competed in all the other events there for two. And, you know, it's great. It's teaching the younger ones school. It's allowing mum and dad to get out there and have a bit of fun. They've put the dollars in and saved up and possibly skimped a little bit or put a little extra effort to get the car up there for the family and keep it prepared. So, you know, it's a family unit working and having fun together.
Grant Nicholas, it's been a pleasure to catch up with you once again on Inside Motorsport, and we're no doubt going to be speaking over the next month as Western Auto Raceway has some of the biggest meetings of the season.
It's a pleasure, Craig, to be back online with you, and look forward to talking to you on a regular basis.
Thanks very much, Grant Nicholas.
And in other news around the place, of course, they've just finished in the cold and snows of Sweden, and they're ready to head off down to Kenya for the next round of the World Rally Championship on the 25th to 27th of February, which is the Safari Rally. Ford co-driver Nicky Grist has spoken out against the World Rally Championship schedule, which takes them from the freezing cold of Swedish Rally only last week down to the super hot and dry conditions of the Kenyan Rally. So he said, yeah, it's a little bit crazy to go from one extreme to the other. So Kenya Safari Rally, it's one of those great rallies of world rallying. It's a rally that a lot of teams looking forward to getting involved with and winning, and particularly the Ford team with the Ford Focus, where they had their first win with the vehicle last year. It's always a very, very hard rally, and a few occasions we've had a few of the locals jump in there and upset the apple cart. But the thing is, of course, they go straight from Kenya, then they back up and turn around and go back up to Portugal, which is still a bit cool this time of year, so craziness as it comes.
Yes, well, one person is looking forward to the good weather continuing in Melbourne is going to be Rory Gordon. And Rory, Formula One news, Minardi unveiled their car at the Guggenheim Museum in Spain. Interesting, the Minardi Fond medal this year launching in, well, a foreign country.
Yeah, it's good evening, gentlemen. Formula One's turning all a bit odd, isn't it? Mind you, though, let's face it, the McLaren launched in Spain, so why not? I mean, why not launch in a foreign country? Why not launch where the sponsors are? I mean, basically, that's what a launch is about. It's about a sponsor's event more than anything else. It's not about, oh, wow, gosh, look at the car. It's fantastic. It goes really fast. It just says, basically, here, wow, look at this. Here's the car. Look at the pretty names we've got on the side. And everyone goes, ooh, and ah. And then after they've gone ooh and ah for a little while, everyone disappears off to a circuit to do some testing to find out what pretty bit they really need on the car, or what pretty bit they don't need on the car, as the case may be. So, launching in another country, I think it depends on where your sponsors come from and what their requirements are. So, I think it might well be something we see more of in the future.
Mm. And of course, given the new connection between Ford via Jaguar Racing, will we see a Formula One launch at Detroit maybe in the future, the national headquarters of Ford?
It's just a thought, isn't it? My God, the thought of a Jaguar being launched in the United States of America. Oh, heresy, Colin, heresy. never see it. No, there are some things that are beyond the pale.
Mm.
I'm sorry, but no, we're just not going to have that. It's just not on. It's just not English, you know, by...
Yes, but mentioning Jaguar, we noticed that once again another generation of Formula One racer, the son is getting involved in the field. This time around, Thomas Scheckter, son of Jody Scheckter.
Yeah, it's son's popping up right, left, and centre all over the place. So it doesn't seem so unusual to me. I suppose. Racing's in the blood, and that's the way it is. To a certain extent, I wish my dad had been a racing driver, then I might have been out there able to race in a car and pick up a few sponsors, but unfortunately it's not the way it is, so and perhaps we'll see some. We've had Graham Hill and Damon Hill, we've had the Villeneuves, who knows what's next up the line, so yeah, it could be very interesting.
Mm. And of course the thing is that at this time of year, everybody's out testing all over the place. So they are really very much into a short time frame before the first Grand Prix of the season in Melbourne in a couple of weeks' time.
Well, yeah, testing's going to be winding up so that people can get their cars put the bits and pieces. Yeah, basically though, they've got about, I think it's about 4 or 5 days until really the testing has to finalise on the current cars that they're going to ship to Melbourne, because then they've got to stick everything into the containers to stick on the planes to get them out to Melbourne, to get them unpacked and to get them in the garages and get everything ready for the first race of the season. So yeah, time is short, and of course for some of the teams I'm not quite sure what the itinerary is, but I do believe that all the parts that are going to be shipped have to be at one central location by such and such a date. It's not as though the plane says, oh, okay, well, we'll do one stop in Britain, one stop in France, one stop in Italy, or another stop in Italy or anything like that. It's, okay, the plane will be leaving this airport at such and such a time. Planes will be leaving this airport at such and such a time. Your stuff has to be there, go through customs and everything by this time. If it's not there, you miss out, and tough. So it does put a certain amount of pressure on some of the teams they have to make sure they get their gear there on time and allow for the problems in getting it from their home base to the airport in time.
Mm.
Just another complication in the whole process.
And of course, one of the complications that the Williams team was potentially facing was a problem with the licensing for Jenson Button.
Yeah, in order to get a super license, someone like Jenson Button has to, although there are quite varied and strange rules involved in here, and actually it's quite interesting, the panel of people who decide whether a driver is worthy of receiving a super license includes Sir Frank Williams. I somehow don't think there's going to be a problem there. Yeah, he has to drive, I think it's something like 700 or 900 kilometres in 2 days, of which no day can be less than 300 kilometres. So he's got to drive a fair bit. But the interesting thing is that Frank Williams has come out and actually said that Button has got 1 season to prove himself, otherwise he's out. So, which makes it all very interesting. You might remember that a couple of weeks ago I suggested perhaps this is the easy way out. It's easier to get rid of Zanardi now while he's a failure or a flop and get in someone like Button who is a nobody and a nothing, and should they get a really named driver coming along, they can just give Button the flick quite easily. He's a nobody, he doesn't matter, and bring in this big name driver. And, well, it would appear that the writing's on the wall actually written there for him so that he can see what's going to happen.
Well, thanks very much for joining us this evening, Rory Gordon. We'll no doubt catch up with you in the next couple of weeks as in the lead-up to the Australian Grand Prix down in Melbourne, and with all the various news and views of what's happening there in the world of Formula One.
Well, that'll be my pleasure, gentlemen, and we'll speak to you next time.
Thank you.
Great.
Changing over from Formula One to the Formula One of Speedway, the Speedcars were out there last night, on Friday night at Claremont Raceway, and the Laurie Matthews Memorial, a former Australian champion and Western Australian local, Mike Figlamini, held off the Easterners and really put on an impressive display.
Well, good afternoon, Craig. How are you?
Not too bad. Con Margro, you join us on the line now, and, well, a very, very impressive Mike Figlamini setting his sights on the Australian Grand Prix next, Australian Speedcar Grand Prix next weekend with an emphatic victory.
Yes, well, it really wasn't that emphatic. I mean, at one stage, Stephen Graham got alongside of him, and they're going through lap traffic, and Stephen had to try something special, which he did. Unfortunately, he clipped the wall. It didn't come off, but as he said to me, next week's the reason he's coming to West Australia, so he's going out to try and see if he can win the 50th Australian Speedcar Grand Prix.
Yes, and Figlamini had a full racing card this season in the Speedcars, so it's good to see him back on top too.
Oh yes, but he raced in America this year. I think he's the only Australian ever been, I think he won 3 feature races in America in Speedcars. He's been running sprint cars for most of the season, so he's very much in touch, and plus he's an outstanding engineer himself. He's the car that he drove, designed and built it. It's called a Fighter, which is the chassis that he builds, and it's a mighty fine race car. And the package he's got, Joe Fontana provides him with the motor from America. So in all, he's got a pretty good package, and he's just a damn good driver.
Now, for the Easterners, Craig Brady had a fairly big spill. Is that going to cause many dramas for next weekend for him and his crew?
Well, the car's a write-off, or the chassis is, but the West Australian boys last night took them on a river cruise up to a place called Mulberry Farm, which is a beautiful part of the Swan Valley here in Western Australia, and they said that they've got a spare chassis for him, and they're all going to club in and put the car together, so they had to make the decision this morning either fly their spare car from Sydney or run a local West Australian car with the help of local West Australian drivers taking the parts off the broken car.
And it sounds like that might be the way they're going.
I think so. That'd be the way to go. And he's a hell of a little driver. But the racing here on Friday night was just so fierce. I doubt very much whether you'd see better speed car racing anywhere in the world. I mean, there was these 5 hot shots from the east and our own 8 or 10 top shots, there was no place that we could hide.
Well, we're looking forward to seeing some of that action as it's filmed every week for, I think it's Channel 7 over in the west?
Yes, Channel 7 and, of course, Red Flag Video. They also film a lot of it. So, yep, I'm sure that you'll see it on Night Thunder, which is our show. It rated up into 11 so far this year. We stick around about 5 or between 5 and 8, so pretty happy with the results of that show, and it's going very well. David Christensen and myself do it on 7. It goes nationally, and then it goes internationally on the network C7.
All right. Now, as we build up towards the Australian Speedcar Grand Prix, a few other points of interest. One driver that's been doing very well on the tracks, on the shorter tracks like Avalon, is Dave Lambert, but he didn't have such a good event.
No, he got to the front a couple of times and spun, but I think the track caught him out. We'd had extreme hot weather coming up to the night, and then on the Friday night it turned extremely windy, and we had about 30 sprint cars and about 30 speed cars doing time trials and hot laps, and the track glazed over a little bit, and down low it was dry slick, and up high it was gumbo. So they had two tracks in one. So I think Lambert might have been caught a little bit, but he's going to be better for the experience on Claremont Friday night. And of course, the reason why they're here is for the AGP at Claremont next Friday night, then the big race at Bunbury next Saturday night.
Yeah, it is a very exciting time for speed cars. I was speaking to Grant Nicholas just a few moments before you were on the show, and of course they're getting ready for a couple of big speed car nights following the Western Australian leg of this, what I have called the Australian Speed Car Tour.
Yeah, well that's tremendous, and I think speed cars are a very credible alternative to sprint cars, and the type of guys and the machinery that's currently on our Australian racetracks, it wouldn't surprise me if we see a resurgence in the popularity as far as spectators are concerned with speed cars. And I think once the people on the eastern seaboard of Australia get out of the habit of calling them midgets, because when you talk to business people and they say midgets, immediately they conjure up something in their mind of being small, but yet we all know that they're speed cars and they're thoroughbreds and they're awesome race cars, and that's what we've just got to try and sell to the public. They are a speed car and they're an absolute beautiful race car.
And or worse still, rubber noses and something with an A on the end of it.
Yeah.
Colin, it's been a pleasure. I'm looking forward to speaking to you next weekend, because we will have another name added to the Australian Speed Car Grand Prix roll book, and well, that is always one that every driver would like to cherish.
Well, I think so, and I think that it looks like the West Australians in particular would love to have their name on it, but it's not going to be easy. Troy Jenkins is in top form. He was wiped out in an accident, and of course you've got Stephen Graham very determined to win. So I think the West Australian Speedway public are going to see a mighty special race, and whoever wins it will be a worthy winner.
Joining us online now on his way back from Calder Park Raceway is Paul Marinelli, and the Pennzoil Quaker State team had a great start to the Nationals campaign. Friday night we saw Peter Kaperis top qualifier by 0.02 of a second, and the top dwarf slammers, and then also the reigning Australian top field champion Robin Kirby had a similar sort of start.
Well, Kirby had a strong start, Craig. Nice to be with you. But unfortunately, it all blew up in smoke during the last qualifier, when a huge nitrous explosion took place on the Pennzoil Swindoll dragster as he completed his pass. It was very, very spectacular to look at, but not too good for the team. They put in a new engine, but were unfortunately eliminated in the first round, again with a similar engine problem baffling the team somewhat in their final run. But Peter Kaperis is the toast of Team Pennzoil Quaker State. His 53 Studebaker champion is now the Nationals champion, the 2000 Top Door Slammers Nationals champion, and a great effort for the Melbourne driver after a superb performance. 225 miles per hour he reached during one of his passes, and Victor Bray unfortunately knocked out by something as small as a broken throttle cable, which made life a little bit easier for us to take that.
It was an interesting weekend for the Pennzoil Quaker State team, because not only did you have pro classes covered, but also Pennzoil and Quaker State getting behind a couple of young drivers in 17-year-old Jason Maggs in Super Sedans, and also Cameron Brooks also involved with Slick 50 in another of the door slammers.
Yes, he had the 53 Corvette top door slammer, a gold coloured car with Slick 50 livery and the engine treatment product, and I've got to say the car looked absolutely sensational, but unfortunately didn't do too much on the track due to a licensing technicality which prevented him from running, so it was a bit of a shame, but having said that, he'll be out there again. Jason Maggs, glad you mentioned him, made it all the way to the fourth round in his super sedan. Now, quite a big jump from Jason, from junior dragster, which has about 27 horsepower, to super sedans with 515 horsepower in the Pennzoil Chev Beretta. He did a great job simply to be there. It's only his third meeting in the car, and did everybody proud, but unfortunately red-lighted at the fourth round, so that eliminated him from proceedings at his first Nationals. I'm sure we'll see a lot more of him. His younger brother, 15-year-old Brendan Maggs in junior dragster, did well. He was also eliminated in the in, I think, his third eliminator, or the semi-final, I should say. And that pretty much wraps up our team there at the Nationals, and we were represented very, very strongly and very, very well by everybody.
Mm. And as you said, Top Door Slammer taking home the Christmas tree really makes for a great weekend as far as Pennzoil and Quaker State are concerned.
Well, it certainly does. I mean, not only for the sponsors, but of course for Peter and all the hard work his Melbourne team, the Capiras brothers, have put into that Studebaker champion. There's very few people that'll tell you how good that car is or how fantastic it looks and performs and how much effort Peter really does put into his drag racing. He's done like 14 meetings this season to date, and he's worked very, very hard, and to come to the Nationals and to beat the best that there are. And also I should add that final run that he did, that was with Robin Judd, also in a Studebaker, which is also a first to have two Studebakers line up for a Nationals final, that it was the fastest ever side-by-side pass in Australian history at 6.316 for Capiras and 6.310 for Judd. He did go a little quicker, but he crossed the centre line, and that's why he did not win, and that handed Capiras the title. It was also one of the fastest passes in Australian in world history as well, in Top Door Slammer. So just goes to show the level of competition in Australia is every bit as good as anywhere else in the world.
It is indeed, and we're looking forward to the completion of this year's Andrew Championship Series, because it has produced some fantastic racing so far, and if we can keep the rain away like it did this weekend, then we will see great racing on the track.
I'm sure that we will, and it was a fantastic meeting. Hats off to everybody at Calder Park and Andrew for putting together a fantastic event, and it was very well attended. I think it was much busier than last year's, and now the next big one to look forward to, of course, is the Conoco Winter Nationals up at Willowbank in Queensland coming up in June.
Yeah, we're all looking forward to that one. Paul Marinelli, thanks once again for joining us here on Inside Motorsport.
My pleasure, thank you.
The man of the moment is Peter Capiras, and Pete, congratulations, Nationals, and a Christmas tree into the coppers is one that you've really enjoyed.
Oh yeah, you better believe it, that's the holy grail, that one.
And to have a pass like you did have, watching two cars, the two Studebakers lining up and running side by side, much of being quite a thrill just as a driver, not only winning, but just running so close the whole way down the track.
Yeah, actually, I didn't even realise I'd won. We got down the end, and another crew had come up and told me I'd won, and it was like, I was just ecstatic. I just couldn't believe it. I mean, we've had so much bad luck the last couple of years, and to go to that meeting and win it was just unbelievable.
This weekend, everything did come together, but it hasn't been through want of trying. Already this season, a number of races under your belt.
Yeah, look, it's just one of those things, you know, it's just got to be your day on the day. You can throw money at it, you can throw people at you, it just doesn't matter. It's got to be your day on the day.
And, of course, the next big one that everyone goes for is the Winter Nationals, but you've got plenty of races in between now and then.
Yeah, we've got, we're racing in Perth in 2 weeks. Then we've got another one in Queensland on the 15th of April, and then it's the Winters, but... both states I've never done any good, so hopefully we can carry that good luck over to there.
Yeah, hopefully so. And Peter, congratulations. The Pennzoil Top Door Slammer, Studebaker, up there in Victory Lane, and I guess you'll be savouring this one for at least a week or so before come down.
I've still got a hangover from yesterday.
Thanks very much for joining us on Inside Motorsport.
No worries. Thank you. Bye.
It's a very happy winner of the Top Door Slammers, picking up that Christmas tree, and it has been a very exciting... few weeks of drag racing over in the United States. Plenty of action there, and in fact, after Peter Norton's postcard from America, we will have, in fact, a few quick words from the winners at the US Winter Nationals in Gary Selsey, and in the Top Door Slammers, it wasn't John Force, it was the WWF car, the World Wrestling Federation sponsored car. An interesting sponsorship involvement there of, isn't it terrible when a name eludes you like that? Wasn't Shoemaker? I hate it when that happens, Colin.
Yeah, well, that's what happens along the way. Actually, the good news to see is the fact that in other news overseas is that Mario Andretti has signed to drive for Don Panos at Le Mans this year. And the deal also includes an offer for Mario Andretti to race for the team in the American Le Mans Series finale at Adelaide in Australia on December 31st. So if Mario's down there, that'll be even more fun. The other interesting item is the fact that the in Formula 3 circles, they're talking about Formula 3 race, supporting that race in Adelaide, is that the German Formula 3 Championship have scheduled one of their rounds the same day as the Marlboro Masters, which normally take place at Zandvoort, and apparently that's a bit of a problem for there, because that's one of those races that combines, you know, with Macau Grand Prix, Pau, etc., Zandvoort, Marlboro Masters.
Mm-hmm.
So the Germans, once again, stick their foot well and truly in it.
Okay, and the British Touring Car Championship, did you mention that last week?
A couple of changes. A couple of changes to incorporate the production cars, the Power Tour cars, so that's been mentioned already. Interesting also, the Kmart team, they were cleared of their test violation at the Mangalore Airport, because the fact was they didn't go past the same point twice as they would on a circuit. So driving a straight line is fine, guys, for testing, but if you go round and round, that's considered a test and you get into problems.
And who's going to know?
Well, that's right. If you drive your car out of the workshop and hammer it down the local freeway...
Well, there is some issues involved with that. Yeah, with trade plates.
Good on you.
It has happened in the past before.
Yeah, but the cars were a little bit more production back in those days.
That's true, but I'm sure that somebody, if they wanted to really check something, could.
All right, joining us now with his postcard from America is Peter Norton. Peter, you've been enjoying the fun and sun of Daytona Beach, which you would not be complaining about considering the weather up north.
Yes, that's right, Craig. Very pleased that I'm down here in the nasty weather further up north. Plenty of snow in Canada and the northern half of the United States. And starting the report really is a very sad report about the weather claiming one of the kart championship, one of the legendary names. Tony Bettenhausen was flying back from the Florida spring training for the kart boys last week. He was in his small plane with his wife and two business associates, and the reports are that he radioed in that he was having problems with ice on the wings and the windscreen, and of course he ultimately crashed into a field, killing all four on board. The team have vowed that they will race on, and the sponsors and everyone are sort of rallying behind that team, ready to carry on that quite a legendary name. The Bettenhausen name is one that people are suggesting is somewhat jinxed in motorsport. Of course, Tony's dad, Tony Sr., died practicing for Indianapolis in 1961. He's also had other family members been in motorsport accidents, so our thoughts are with that family at the moment.
Well, Peter, you're in Daytona now, and obviously it's one thing in mind, the 500.
Let's start by looking through the starting grid for the Daytona 500, and then I'll fill in a few of the stories that have been emerging as we run through some of the names. Starting with the people who did not qualify, Dave Marcus. He has been in the Daytona 500 for the last 32 years straight. He failed to qualify this year. He must be finding it pretty tough this weekend not to be involved in the on-track action. He's got all of his gear packed up and getting ready for the season ahead. But it really is the passing of time, and maybe it's time to move across, because there's plenty of young drivers coming through that are taking the spots that he would normally occupy.
The trucks. Another famous family name in Mike Wallace that took victory in this event.
I was fortunate to be up front a lot, but if this wasn't a race that the fans and the media and everybody enjoyed, I don't know what else you can ask for. You know, the racing, the competition was very, very competitive. I don't think there was more of a lead of 5 to 6 truck lengths the whole race. You know, the only downside to the whole race was the incident that happened on the front straightaway. We can't forget about that. Our hearts and prayers are with all the fans, or the few fans that got hurt, and just doing fine here. But we had a great truck race.
Another driver who did not qualify is Jeff Bodine. Of course, he's the 1986 Daytona 500 champion. And he really heated up the action in Craftsman's truck racing on Friday, rather than in any of the Winston Cup cars. He was racing in the truck race. It was their first year racing at Daytona as part of Speed Week, and a 250-lap race. And these vehicles were travelling very closely together, fighting it out for the lead, and, of course, the ultimate happened, a huge accident, 11 vehicles involved. Jeff didn't start the accident. He was sort of caught up in the middle of it, and his truck sort of rode up the wall and into the catch fencing, and rolls end over end 11 or 14 times, totally destroying the car. He's got a few injuries, nothing too life-threatening. He's got a fracture in the wrist, a broken toe, and a very small fracture to a vertebrae. The doctors say that there's no real problems there. But the real story is the 9 race fans who were injured. The big parts of the car, the wheels and tyres and engines and things like that, that was all contained quite nicely by the safety fencing, which did its work quite well. But much smaller pieces of shrapnel showered the crowd, and 9 fans were injured, and 5 of them were taken to hospital. Most of them released. I think there was 2 that have kept overnight for a bit of observation. I think there was a few broken bones, but mostly cuts and scrapes from the flying bits of metal. A pretty nasty accident, and it was fairly horrifying to see the reports and the TV replays over and over again. Reminds us that it can be a little bit dangerous on track and also in the stands. But the good news is that the catch fencing and other safety measures worked very well, and all of the safety crews were on the scene very quickly to attend to the fans. Moving now to the people who just scraped into the race. Another old-timer who, of course, has announced his retirement, Darrell Waltrip, has announced that 2000 will be his victory year. He's determined he's going to win something this year. Personally, I doubt it, particularly if he's only scraping into the races using provisional starting positions. Maybe he should have retired a little earlier. But we'll wait and see. We wish him all the best nonetheless. Another driver just scraping into the race, Kyle Petty. That famous family name of Petty for NASCAR goes back 3 generations, and of course there's a younger Petty coming through to make it 4. And really the big news from the Petty camp is that next year that they will be returning to the Dodge racing family. Of course, Richard Petty and his father as well before that had so much success in Dodge vehicles across the years, particularly back in the 50s and thereabouts. So it's pretty exciting news for the Petty Racing Enterprises to be returning back to Dodge. Their other team member, John Andretti, he qualified a little bit better. He's starting in 30th position. And of course, the Speed Week is all about various events to make people qualify for the big event itself. It starts with a pole shootout where only the first 2 drivers get a guaranteed starting position. Then they have some qualifying races, the Twin 125s is what they're called, and the first 15 cars from each of those races then go forward and form the grid. And a few provisional and a few other safety net positions there as well. So just starting towards the back and running our way forward, mentioning some of the more notable names. Dale Earnhardt, who'll be starting in 21st position, and he hit the news this week by, again, winning the Race of Champions race. That's where we've got a collection of races, mainly from NASCAR, unfortunately. There's a few conflicts in the calendar for the kart races to join them, and Dale Earnhardt just keeps winning this thing over the last couple of years.
I want to comment on Dale Jr. not following me all day. Well, what do you think? Kid passion, bumpy and passion like that, and I don't know, it was a good race. It was fun all day with him, and I tell you, True Value and Pontiac and Goodyear and everybody just does a great job sponsoring that series, and we appreciate all their support, DuPont and everybody. Put this series on, and all us drivers enjoy racing these cars. They're a lot of fun to race, a lot of side-by-side racing. It don't really, give it to one guy or the other, I don't think. I was, felt pretty comfortable leading the race. I knew they were going to do something. I really thought they'd wait to the last lap, but I think they got a little anxious and, a lap too soon. Stewart and Dale Jr. worked with me and stayed out on the outside, and we were able to draft back by them off of 2. So, it was play to my advantage and worked well for me. So it was just an exciting race for me. It's always fun in IROC, but it's especially fun today. And I knew they were going to do it. I didn't think they'd do it that lap. And worked out that they did it that lap for me. I bet he won't do that again, though.
Bobby Labonte will be starting in 13th. Jeff Gordon's been a little bit quiet in one of the just the prize money events. It didn't actually count for anything, and that was the Budge Shootout. He finished second in an exciting finish there, but that didn't help him with his qualifying position. He'll be starting from 11th due to his result in one of the 125s. Mark Martin will be starting 9th. Very happy to be free from his back injuries that plagued him all of last year and also some previous years. In 8th position, Dale Earnhardt Jr. Yes, the young fellow there has done much better than his old man, starting in 8th for his first Daytona 500, so watch out for that guy. Rusty Wallace will be starting from 5th. One of the big stories is a guy who you're normally quite used to seeing further back in the field, Bill Elliott in the McDonald's Ford. He'll be starting 3rd. He qualified very well in the pole shootout, and he won one of the 125 races to secure him a nice 3rd starting position. 2nd place will be Ricky Rudd, the new team member for the Robert Yates Racing team. He qualified extremely well in the pole shootout, coming 2nd there. He also won one of the 125 races, so the Robert Yates team is looking very strong. And of course the headliner for Robert Yates is the defending champion, NASCAR champion that is, Dale Jarrett. Absolutely blitzed them in the pole shootout. And then there was this, as I said, the Budd shootout. Dale started at the back in one of the second chance races there to qualify for this prize money event. He won that race quite comfortably, sort of daylight second in that one. They got him in the last starting position in the Budd shootout race proper. Starting from the rear, he also managed to work his way through that one and won that one. This time not so comfortably, he just scraped it through. There was about 6 cars fighting for the victory in that one, including Dale Jarrett, Ricky Rudd, and Jeff Gordon. Quite an exciting finish there as the cars just behind Dale tangled, and Ricky Rudd ended up on his roof sliding across the track in quite an exciting flip and a very gentle roll. No one injured in that one, thank goodness, but it was one of those things where Robert Yates would have been exciting, winning the prize money, but also a little bit sad that the prize money would be spent on rebuilding Ricky Rudd's car. And that's the very good reason why in some of these lead-up events the drivers use a spare car. They keep their A1 choice car for the big event, which on camera time starts in a few hours' time. It'll be televised on one of your stations there late Sunday night or early Monday morning.
Well, first of all, Jay Sauter stayed with me the whole day, and he really made it possible for me to win the race. After we pitted, he was behind me, and he really stuck it out with me, and I appreciate all the help he gave me today. And I thought I was sort of stalled out beside LaJoy there. We'd run next to each other, and he'd stall out, and then I'd catch back up, and I'd stall out, and I thought we were just going to kind of finish like that. And I really didn't realize the laps were really winding down. And then the biggest turning point was the 2 car went to the bottom, and the 44 decided to go high. The 1 went high, and I pushed the 2 car, and I gave him such a good push getting into 3 that he actually got a little loose getting into 3 and moved up the track, it looked like. And then I shot underneath him, and Nemechek pulled in front of the 43, and he gave me a big push that last lap, and I had so much room going into 1. He pushed me so fast, I had about 6 car lengths, and then really all I had to do was watch my mirror there the last half lap.
Peter, now, with all the preliminaries out the way, your attention is fully focused on 500 miles at Daytona Beach.
Yes, I'll be very excited to be joining that race, this time watching it from the grandstands with the crowds, giving everyone a crowd viewpoint on things. It's the fastest growing sport, and I'll be particularly making note of what it's like to be just one of the many thousands of fans being stuck in the traffic jams, lining up for hot dogs, all those sorts of things, to see whether NASCAR have really earning their place as the fastest growing sport, or whether they're sort of milking it a little bit. And it's also been interesting to watch the publicity machine over this last week. It's been an interesting week, of course, and they couldn't really do much to suppress the accident in the truck racing with the fans hurt. But some of the other little stories that are popping up in the local press really don't get reported on NASCAR.com or any other of their official outlets. One interesting story was Robbie Gordon, who's moved across from kart racing. He was in a bit of a punch-up with last year's Rookie of the Year, Tony Stewart. Funny thing, that doesn't get reported in NASCAR.com. They're promoting the very, very wholesome family image of this sport, and sometimes they're choosing to ignore some of the more interesting and spicy moments that that we really like to hear about. But anyway, I'll be reporting in full on quite an exciting race, hopefully next weekend. Until then, that's what I said from over here.
Thanks very much, Peter Norton, with his postcard from Daytona.
Yeah, and over in the USA at Pomona, the AutoZone Winter Nationals were run and under the new rules regarding the 90% nitromethane and also the oil down rules, and the rest of it's been sort of fairly controversial. But apparently they had some really good racing, and over there it was Gary Selzy who took out the top fuel class, and this is what he had to say after the run.
You know what, I just wish this was a double A or triple A finals right now. But you know what, it's a great way to start. This car was so consistent. My guys worked so hard. They changed motors every round. I mean, I'm tired. I was mixing fuel. By the time I got the fuel mix, they were yelling at me to start the car, and I wasn't even done yet. It's a tribute to Alan and these guys. They've been working hard over the winter. They don't like second place, and neither do I. I'll tell you what, I hope this is just the beginning of the end.
Winning the top funny car class was Jerry Tolliver.
Jerry Tolliver down here celebrating with the gang, loving it, living life large right now. You are the champ.
Hey, oh my guy over here. Hey, Dale. Dale Armstrong, I got to do this. This guy deserves a win. He twists all the wrenches. All I have to do is push the pedal. My job's easy. He's the man that's got to work and think.
He done it that time. It was all him in the final.
Congratulations. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Jerry Tolliver there, and he was the driver that I mentioned before, sponsored by the WWF, and he sounded like someone who could very much hold his own in the WWF.
Yeah, it's sort of interesting where the sponsorship comes from these days in motorsport. Just a few quick things from Phillip Island last week. The two race formats spread over Saturday and Sunday. That won't be happening again. The fans voted by not turning up and...
Well, $100 for 2 days
is a little bit much, particularly Phillip Island.
Like, it's not the Grand Prix, come on. It's just proof that obviously people go to the Grand Prix for more than just the supercars.
Mm-hmm. The eligibility of the diagonal roll bar in the front of Russell Ingall's VT Commodore was passed. As well, there's talk once again of more races overseas for VET supercars. Apparently there's three consortiums looking for three different races over in New Zealand.
Something that Peter didn't mention. You mentioned about that roll bar configuration.
Mm-hmm.
In just something quickly. Peter didn't mention it, and that was Mike Skinner. You might have picked up his voice, which we forgot to intro into Peter's report, who won, not Mike Skinner, it was Mike Kenneth, who won the Bush Grand Nationals, the Napa Auto Parts 300 today, or earlier this morning, or whatever you want to call it. As the prelude to the Daytona 500. But Mike Wallace in the number 7 Bush Grand National car had a very nasty flip where the car came straight over and just bang straight on the front right hand corner of where over the front right hand front corner of the roof. Now, left hand front corner of the roof on the driver's side, obviously. Mm-hmm. And NASCAR had just mandated one of those bars down the centre of the windscreen,
mm-hmm.
and another bar, which, you know how you used to have the little air conditioning side front flat window, which we no longer have because there is real such thing as real air conditioning.
Yep.
I don't know what you call it, the vent window on the front of the car. But they've mandated that a bar must come down from the roof rail straight down the side, once again, much like the barring in that Ingle Perkins Commodore. Now, this bar was probably what saved Michael Waltrip from some very, very serious injury, because even with those two reinforcing bars on that part of the car, the window section of where the drivers get in and out of the door was crunched quite considerably. It was reduced, but if that bar hadn't have been there, it would have been reduced even further.
Mm. I think the interesting thing is too, I'd say that probably Larry Perkins in design that, okay, he looked at the structural strength of the car in terms of torsional stiffness for suspension setup, but I'd say he's also probably look at a couple of the accidents that have occurred with cars in the last year or so, particularly the big Craig Lowndes prang at Caldwell last year, and that's probably made him think, okay, let's make some other changes. The other interesting thing is the European Super Touring Cup looks like it's on the go again, and already there's talk that there's going to be a 29 car plus entry, and that takes in competitors from the Italian, German and French series. And already there's talk there'll be cars entered there from Alfa Romeo, BMW, Audi, Honda, Peugeot and Opel. So after the first people try and kill it off, it comes up and bites them in the back again.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's it for another week. What's coming up on the racing program in the next few weeks? Of course, we build up towards more and more on the Melbourne Grand Prix. We might have to get a hold of John Davison to have a word with him to see how his plans are going. Of course, we mentioned last week, Sly Stallone has dropped the F1 movie. It's now all about kart.
And of course, next week we'll also be looking at
South African Rally,
the Kenya Rally, Safari Rally,
and drag racing,
Phoenix, NHRA Drags Phoenix, and we've still got a little way to go until we get the first of FedEx Championship with Homestead, which is March 26th, and then
the Australian Speedcar Grand Prix.
Yeah, it's all happening, isn't it ever? So yep, it's all go go go. But of course, the big thing we'll be building up to is the Australian Grand Prix down in Melbourne, and hopefully we're trying to organise some live coverage from down there. So if that all works out, we'll be down there reporting. All good. Now it's also fun to sponsorship to do it with.
All right, that's it from us for another week. We hope you've enjoyed Inside Motorsport, and we'll rejoin us next week. If you've missed the show, don't forget, on the internet you can catch all the action.
Inside Motorsport is produced by Thunder Media in the studios of SSFM Canberra via Comrade Sat with the support of the Community Broadcasting Association of Australia.